We can validate your opinion if you took the time to write into the show. 'Cause it's a great debate. Maybe we'll learn something new, 'cause the input comes directly from you for this show. 'Cause it's a great debate. If you don't think our picks are great, a Twitter poll decides its fate. Don't hate us. It's a great debate.
Yeah, I think I could really go pro with this.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and one thing pop culture taught me in 2018 is that women be traumatized.
Oh, the show notes have me third for some reason. Hi, I'm Joanna Robinson, and one thing that pop culture taught me in 2018 is that you can delete your tweets, and you should.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if there's one thing that I learned this year from the popular culture, is that you don't have to say really anything on Twitter. Like, you don't, like, if you have, like, a bad thought, or even, like, a kind of bad thought, or even, like, a thought that people might think is bad, you don't have to say it. It's
like,
much easier to just not.
Tell a friend or text a friend or something
right.
like that.
Don't or, like, put it, Twitter. find a safe space
yeah.
to place that information
yeah.
that's not public. So, you don't have to.
Learn from 50s housewives and just yell into a pillow.
Is that what they did?
Women be traumatized, Neil. Women be traumatized.
yell into a pillow. Take some, you know, mother's little helper as well.
Yes. We're here for a great debate of 2018, the final great debate of 2018. We're going to do some superlatives, some bests. If you are a patron at patreon.com/stormofspoilers at the Maester or Small Council level, you'll be getting a bonus segment this week of our one, the worst thing. Because everybody knows that dragging things is sometimes more fun than pointing out how good a year was pop culturally.
But also, you don't have to say everything outside the paywall.
That's true.
Outside the Patreon wall.
Inside the paywall, the barbs are a little sharper. This will be your final reminder in 2018 that next year, on July 12th through 14th in Nashville, Tennessee, is the third annual Con of Thrones. This will be the first one after the HBO show Game of Thrones is over, which means we're going to be doing lots of talking, lots of speculating, lots of nerdery. Make sure to get your tickets and hotel rooms now. It's only going to get harder as everybody remembers Game of Thrones is on when it's actually on closer to the con. Do it now. That's my piece. Joanna, do we have any reviews this week?
We have so many reviews and some really long ones. So I am going to read a couple of those and hopefully they're not too long. But this first one is Jesse from LA. It's 5 stars, pew, 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 and slippies forever. By far my favorite pop culture podcast, the hosts Joanna, Neil, and Dave bring such varied and insightful views that always enhance my appreciation for whatever topic they are discussing. Joanna is a national treasure, and Nicolas Cage might as well cast her as the subject of a long-anticipated third installment of that franchise. Dave, you are a delight. I love your nerdy fascinations and tangents that will never win you a great debate popular vote poll, but will always win my heart. And Neil, I love your outsider, everyman perspective, which will always make the discussion more grounded. You both can also be in the upcoming blockbuster hit National Treasure 3 as well. If the weight of this, my first ever commented review of my 30-year life, brings anything, I hope it is a future episode from this podcast about the amazing sci-fi show The Magicians. The show just seems to get stronger every season and deserves a wider audience of supporters to keep it going. I'm going to skip this part where the lovely Jesse praises Max Landis because I don't like it. and then, well, no, it's a praise for Dirk Gently. I just don't That's okay. And then Jesse says, big shout out to my beautiful boyfriend, Felipe, for recommending this podcast to me. I'm very excited to spend another year getting to know what other great podcasts you've been hiding from me and you know more about your, and know more about your life and who you are and stuff. I love you. I try to, and then, so that was like a little aside to Felipe. So just so you know, like if you want to like shout out a friend in a review, as long as you leave us 5 stars, I'll read it.
Not Max Landis though. You can't do that.
Also, I've, the National Treasure thing is interesting. I've always considered myself to be chubby Justin Bartha.
All right. To close out Jesse's review, Jesse says, I try my best to always pay this awesome recommendation forward and share this pod with all my friends who I think enjoy nice things and including now to strangers on the internet. Keep up the good vibes and chats, XOXO, Gossip Girl, I mean Jesse. And then we have another long one, but I'm only going to read half of it because the back half was just for me and genuinely it made me cry. But the person who wrote this review told me I didn't have to read it out loud. So I'm not going to, but ELO11 exclamation mark. I did cry the part they left just for me. Thank you so much. 5 stars. Hot fruit haters rejoice and all you normal people too. I'm long overdue in writing a review for this wonderful podcast and I can't believe that Joanna's hot fruit aversion is what finally forced me to do it. There have been many times listening to these three lovely hosts where I felt seen or directly spoken to, yet nothing has topped this revelation. And Mike sure too, we're in good company. Joanna, Dave, and Neil can always be counted on to provide thoughtful and entertaining discussion about all things Game of Thrones and during the off-season tour, the wider world of pop culture. Each of the hosts brings their own unique perspective and personality to the podcast, and their conversations are all the better for it. And then the part that made me cry. So thank you, ELO, and thank you all of you for leaving your reviews for us on iTunes. We really appreciate it. I want to also quickly say we've already done our, you know, by the time you're listening to this, especially we've already done our movie club for December. It was Love Actually. We forced Dave to watch it. It was great. If you are still looking for holiday presents and you want to pick up some Storm of Spoilers merch, you can go to chaosislit.com. We got a lot of merch there. If you want to join us over on our Patreon Slack, you know how to go to patreon.com hopefully and, you know, subscribe and then you can go to slack.com/get-started. The last thing I want to say is that when I was feeling very sure about the Game of Thrones release date earlier, when we talked about this before, that was back when HBO had a different release schedule. Now they've moved Big Little Lies from March to June. Now I don't know what's happening in April for Game of Thrones.
So maybe it's early April.
Yeah, and I don't know if any of this has anything to do with Marvel moving Avengers back from May into April. And then that sent HBO scurrying back further into April. I don't know. But there's something's afoot with HBO and release dates.
There's 6 episodes of this, of Game of Thrones, and If they started Big Little Lies in the first week of June, that's still mid-April.
There's no way that we don't have a week where we're all killing ourselves to no Avengers and Game of Thrones things. That's my conclusion of 2019.
Oh, well, I mean, that's going to be true either way, I think.
Just like all our fingers bleed, all our vocal cords just peel away.
They're either going to premiere on the same weekend or it's going to be like Game of Thrones episode 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're screwed either way, Dave.
3 of 6.
It's going to be super fun. Yeah, we're going to be on Game of Thrones movie number 3.
Yeah. We're going to be in the middle. We're going to be like flagging. We won't even be able to see the end in sight. And we're just going to be like, oh my God, the episodes are so long. Why?
What if they just release them like every 2 weeks? So they give us 2 weeks in between each episode to digest.
I will say this because even though this is not the appropriate place for it, by the time you hear this, I will have appeared on the Great Game of Thrones podcast, Nauticast, for a very long episode about whether or not the show has spoiled the books. And the reason I mention it right now is because of what Neil just said reminded me of a joke that the lovely host of that podcast came up with, which is that I've got my like my tinfoil Maester chain link, and like I feel like Neil's entire chain is made of tinfoil links. He's like crackpotting release dates. He's like, what if they break all convention ever and just release Game of Thrones every other week?
I am actually the Grand Maester who gives out the tinfoil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I took over for Jason from The Ringer when he went on to become a musical superstar. I don't know if you saw him on Twitter singing this week.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, great. It's just great. So yeah, tinfoil rings for all the best people only. Cool. So yeah, so we're screwed in April either way. Fun. Mm. Fun. Oh, also, Star Wars Celebration is in April?
Remember when we pretended we were going to take that week off?
Does that mean we're getting a trailer in the middle of all of that?
Yeah, Star Wars trailer that we're going to have to do a bunch of screenshots from. GIFs. Oh, God. Joanna's going to set a world record for most GIFs created in a week. It's going to be great. Anyway, what are we doing? Where are we at in this episode?
Your turn to chase and storm. Okay.
Dave, I think it's time to cue up the sounds.
All right.
Because we're going storm chasing. This is where we talk about one pop culture storm that we're chasing this week. It could be a movie, show, book, podcast, episode of Rachel Maddow, whatever floats your boat this week. I will start because it is screener season, and I've decided to do two things this year. One, I am not putting pressure on myself to watch everything. I'm just watching the things that I regret missing so far in the year. I started this week with The Favourite, which stars Rachel Weisz, Emma Stone, and the Queen, mm-hmm. Olivia Colman. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, there's a few things that I learned. One super fascinating performance piece. This is like, it's basically a movie. It's about Queen Anne. I can't remember when it sets, what, 1400s, 1500s-ish. And it's about sort of the jockeying for position in the Queen's court between these two women who are cousins. And one of them, Rachel Weisz, starts out very powerful. The other one, Emma Stone, her character starts out very low, and then it's sort of a juggling act to see who will win the day. All throughout, Olivia Colman is doing like a million things in this movie, and every time she does something, it's the exact right thing for that moment. Like, that's how good her performance is here. And I think this is one of those movies also that probably could exist nicely as like a stage play if it had to. Mm-hmm. But the way that Yorgos Lanthimos, the Greek man who directed this, shoots it is very fascinating. It's like the combination of two very sort of striking things where there's a lot of like slow tracking shots where you're like, so like Queen Anne was stricken with gout, so she had to be rolled around in a wheelchair. So there's like long tracking shots of them like pushing her around in a wheelchair and talking. And but then there's these scenes where you're like in a room and the camera is stuck sort of in the middle of the room and it just sort of rotates around as things happen. And it's just sort of, it sort of augments your perspective on scenes. And it sort of is just an interesting flair. I don't know if it exists for any other reason than to just be sort of interesting visually. But I loved it. It's extremely my jam. It's funny. It's mean. And, it has some wildly fun performances, and I think it should win Best Actress three times this year.
Yeah. Shout out to Nicholas Holt and his amazing.
Oh, career. Yeah. Also Nicholas Holt. Nicholas Holt is the only, and I don't know what this says about the movie. Probably good things that he's the only male actor that I recognized or even cared about remotely in that.
I think Mark
in that movie,
Mark Gatiss is in it too, right?
Yeah. But barely.
Yes, it's, I posted this on Instagram, but, is The Favourite? Who produced The Favourite? Focus? No? Anyway, whoever,
it's one of those
whoever
fancy.
Distributed it, and please don't hurt me for not knowing, sent me a swag, and they sent me a pack of cards. And I love this pack of cards because, like, it's got the women are like the king and the queen and the ace and the whatever, and the men are only like the Joker cards. The two guys are just the two Joker cards, and everything else is just, oh, there's no, the king is blank. And then it's like the queen, the ace, and the jack are like our three women on all the suits. And so it's just like it's good. A lot of swag is really stupid. Thank you, Fox Networks, for sending me the stupidest thing I ever got last week. I know you're listening to this.
Well, I like that because it's Fox Searchlight that did the favorite. So okay. Fox gives and takes with both hands.
There you go.
Did they also do the Equalizer? Because the Equalizer 2 sent out the most fun swag. I did not get it, but Rob Hunter did. It's like an advent calendar with like a bunch of little bottles of like booze in it.
Ooh, nice.
And then like one of them was like a shotgun shell, so that's weird. Oh. But it is the Equalizer.
Okay, never mind. This is not the swag hour. Should I talk about what storm I'm chasing?
Yes, Joanna, what are you chasing this week?
I finally watched Bohemian Rhapsody because
Boo!
Wow. Bryan Singer.
Yeah, that's right. No, we're good. We're good. Okay. I was just gonna boo the movie. The rest of what she's gonna say is exciting.
Okay. I finally watched Bohemian Rhapsody, which I
boo.
I'm so late to it is because I share Dave's thoughts that like boo this production, boo to Brian May and the other member of Queen, whose name I can't remember. For like insisting that this stupid version of the story exist, boo to Bryan Singer, and boo to a lot of the like, boo to the terrible, terrible, terrible villainous gay stereotype character that Alan Leach from Downton Abbey's playing, boo to like a lot of historical inaccuracies, boo to a lot of that. Hooray for two things. One is Joe Mazzello from Jurassic Park plays a member of Queen, and I somehow missed it in all the trailers because he's just got like
the kid.
Joe Mazzello. He's also in Social Network and The Pacific and a lot. You know, I've seen a grown up Joe Mazzello. I've seen him charm snakes and Justified. Like I've seen him do things, but he's got an enormous wig in the trailer, and I just like missed it. And so I was watching and I was like, holy shit, it's Joe Mazzello. And so he's great and does like a decent British accent and that's all good. I'm just going to echo what a lot of people have already said, which is actually that Rami Malek gives like a tremendously good performance in this film. And like, this is from someone who isn't as like generally spellbound by Rami Malek as other people. Like I found his Mr. Robot thing like compelling for like exactly half a season. And then I was like, okay, it's a flat affect. Like how much can we do with that? You know, but I did love him in The Pacific, which is a great miniseries that they did. That was like a follow up to Band of Brothers many years ago. He plays like a very like kind of unhinged character. I don't know. I guess I'm just like really hot and cold on Rami Malek, but like what he does here with Freddie Mercury. And then I went and watched like a bunch of interviews with Freddie Mercury because I realized I'd never like seen Freddie Mercury talk, is pretty incredible. So, you know, like I'm just going to go ahead.
How do I engage with it and like still feel okay about myself? Do I wait until it's on like a streaming service? Is it worth like a rental? Do I wait until somebody puts the Freddie Mercury clips on YouTube?
That's a good question.
How good of a performance is trapped in this?
How
like,
do I protest this movie, but also honor its central performance?
Exactly.
I should also say that Lucy Boynton, who was so good in what was that great movie about British kids and music that came out 2 years ago? Sing Street. She's really good in this.
Nailed
too.
It.
Thank you. I was like, it's not If Beale Street Could Talk. Like that's what my brain was trying to do,
but
and
it
I was
is
like,
a street.
And I was like, no. All right. It's a very good performance. I would wait till it's on a streaming service. I would encourage you all to not pay for it, but like, it's already made a bajillion dollars, so it's not like you know you can really not vote with your dollars. But I think Rami Malek is like actually truly great in this. I went in like being like, he's not going to be that great. False
you know
teeth
what,
can only get you so far, and then I was like, oh, he's really good.
Someday, after it comes out on DVD, I'm sure someone will make a video essay, which is just like all about Rami Malek's performance.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll probably be all you need to watch.
Interesting.
Like they'll make like a really good video essay that's like, let's show all the best clips. You know, it'll probably be on Film School Rejects. I don't know.
it sounds like a safe bet.
Anyway, speaking of you, Dave.
Yeah.
Let's, What's going on in your stormy world?
So it's far enough into December at this point that I'm into my Harry Potter reread, which this year I'm going to do the Jim Daly audiobooks. It's been a couple of years since I've done them all. I've done pieces of them in the past, but I'm back on it. And boy, isn't it weird to remember that Voldemort doesn't have a T at the end of his name, because that's how it is for the first four audiobooks before the movie comes out, and then apparently they decide to roll it over and keep it Voldemort with a hard T. And then, of course, J.K. Rowling, after doing the whole movie thing, said, no, actually, it's a soft T, even though there's lots of video of her pronouncing it with a hard T. But it's just, you know, a reminder.
Cool story, J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, Rowling, Rowling, who cares?
The crimes of Rowling.
But, it's Voldemort is Voldemort. It threw me away in the Philosopher's Stone, Sorcerer's Stone. Yeah, I got the American version. It's the Sorcerer's Stone. It threw me in the Sorcerer's Stone, but now I'm settling back into it, and I kind of wish that they could just go back and redub some movies.
I like the Jim Dale version a lot of the audiobooks. Like, I tried the Stephen Fry's, and I just didn't like them as much. Stephen Fry does the British, Jim Dale does the American, and even though Jim Dale himself is British. I will say, though, that I miss the days, like, before the movies where, like, you could tell people who had listened to the audiobooks and people who had read the books, because the audiobook people knew how to pronounce Hermione. And the book only people were still saying, like, Hermione or whatever. Jim Dale, big fan of.
I guess so. My biggest one is I wrote, like, a joke song about Hogwarts that pronounced Osseo as Akio, and, like, the second I heard it on screen, I'm like, fuck, that song's no good now. Akio Rock is such a good punchline, but now it's just not worth it. That's my storm. Back into Harry Potter. Join me, guys. The winter is long and perfect for wizarding.
It's Dave's secret book club. Is Dave just doing the audiobooks by himself and then telling us about it later?
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. That we've chased them all down. We're done for the whole year. We're done.
All right, that means it's time to talk about superlative great debates. We're gonna do a best movie, and we've each picked one. It was a little tough for me this year. There's a lot of good movies this year, and then you guys have submitted through our Patreon and email things that we've chosen. We're gonna have three host choices, three listener choices. Neil, you're the keeper of the polls. Are we gonna narrow down the three listener choices to a fourth candidate ourselves, or are we splitting the polls again?
Well, we can split the polls. I felt like that went well last time, right?
I do like democracy.
Lots
of layers of needless democracy.
Also, who are we to just, like, judge these listener picks?
I really like that Dave is the one always advocating the democracy, but I've never seen Dave have to write or manage a poll. Neil does all the Twitter polls and I do all the Slack polls.
I mean, listen, in fairness, it's not hard. It's not hard at all.
Don't tell Dave that.
What I hear is I'm very good at delegating.
Yeah, sure. we'll do a poll where we actually did this the most democratic possible, in my mind, way, where we've each chosen one listener thing, because we got so many. You guys were awesome. But we could, you know, there's only so much time, theoretically. So we each picked one, and then you guys can vote on those. We'll do, you know, we'll dramatically read people's emails and stuff. So.
Fantastic.
Make a good pitch here.
All right. So these polls will be up at twitter.com/stormofspoilers.
Yeah.
After this episode hits,
whenever that happens.
Yeah. Make sure to vote. All right. We're going to start with best movie of 2018. Joanna, why don't you begin?
Oh, okay. Okay, Katie, okay.
Or if you want to do your listener one first, I guess you could.
Yeah.
I'll do mine.
Or someone else could go first.
I'll do mine. I will just say, I feel like slightly weird about this pick, and it might just be that I'm like in it too much because I'm writing about it so much right now. But usually my favorite film of the year is like something that's come out around now. It's something that A24 put out or something like that. Something like very delicate and personal and what have you. I did not find that movie this year, in the Oscar hopefuls. I didn't find a movie that really, really drilled into me that way. So, what I'm really, really, really enjoying right now, and I hope it's not just like recency bias or whatever, is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which, you know, by the time you guys hear this, we're recording this a little early, but by the time you hear this, you will have seen it. I hope it will like make $1 million jillion at the box office. My current worry, you're just going to hear the time capsule worry, which is that like Aquaman Into the Spider-Verse are about to come out at the same time. All the reviews for Aquaman are like, it's dumb but fun. And like all the reviews for Spider-Man are like, it's amazing. And I'm really worried that dumb but fun is going to win out over it's actually amazing. It's actually good and fun.
Well, it depends on what you mean by win.
Like dollars wise. Aquaman has already made like, nearly $1 billion like overseas and stuff like that, and it's just like, or no, nearly $100 million. Sorry, let me.
I mean, it's
that
Wonder
down.
Woman for bros. So like,
anyway, we're not here to talk about Aquaman. We're here to talk about Spider-Man. I felt bad taking this from Dave, even though I don't think this was necessarily his top choice. But I was blown away by this film. I really, really loved it. I've seen it twice now. And I just, you know, you will have heard Dave and me talk about this already on our Spider-Verse podcast, but, I just think it's a really, really impressive achievement on many different levels artistically. It's a great story. There's a lot of like emotion to it and humor and wit. And then in terms of like a piece of, I mean, I'm going to sound like Dave here, but in terms of like a pivot point towards new and other and better franchise things, it's a really like impressive technical achievement on that level as well. And I just like having talked to all the people who worked on it, like it genuinely seems like a labor of love. So I'm gonna go with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Awesome. That makes me more excited to actually see it.
I'm sure by now in broadcast time you have, Neil, otherwise we're gonna
have
mock
I?
You incessantly.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, Neil. Go have some breakfast tacos at the Draft House and watch Into the Spider-Verse.
Like, Theo will go with you. Theo loves Spider-Man. You and Theo go have a bro date, leave the house, go see Spider-Man.
Right. And we've both been sort of cooped up in the house for various personal health issues. So it's about time we get out there and see some Spider-Man.
Yeah. Keep it rolling, Neil, with our fantastic 2018 year.
Okay. Well, I actually am going to start with the listener one because I'm saving mine. I got a big monologue coming here.
Oh, all right.
But this is not going to be it. This is from a listener, Harrison Forth, which I found first to be a very entertaining name. I'm saying your whole name because it's also your Twitter handle, which I'm going to read. It's @Harrison_Forth. Great name. Harrison would like to submit Mission Impossible Fallout. And he says, I'm sure this will be an end of year list favorite for some, but perhaps not mentioned by yourselves. So allow me to explain why it should be in contention for the number one spot. Firstly, you know how every Mission Impossible movie has that one iconic stunt or scene that we remember it by? Well, Fallout is wall to wall full of them. This film is genuinely extraordinary, not just because it surpasses its predecessors in delivering nonstop thrill, but also because of the seemingly impossible mission it accomplishes, to make the sixth installment one of the best action movies ever made. Large location set pieces, like the heart-pounding chase sequences through Paris and London, are linked together by the smallest details, executed to perfection, including maintaining precise camera focus on Tom Cruise's face as he jumps out of said plane. Might just be the best, and certainly most extreme, shot of the year. I would agree. Henry Cavill reloading his arms in the intense bathroom fight is right up there with one of the all-time greatest improvisations of all time. I mean, you use all-time twice in that sentence, but I agree. Just the fact that Cruz learned to fly a helicopter solo meant that every minor detail of that sequence was filled with a real and perceptible sense of danger. Even the progressive character beats feel so timely for 2018, and yet they're totally underplayed. No fridging, catfights, or damsels in distress. Right? Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems right. But watching it is one thing. Learning about how it was accomplished is another. Sorry for plugging another podcast. I know Joanna is a fan, but the near 7-hour interview spoiler specials with Christopher McQuarrie from the Empire podcast. Ooh, drink.
Big Ben sounds.
Help you to appreciate just how extraordinary the making of this film is. McQuarrie's instinctual handling of this film is to be marveled at, and his explanation of blockbuster audience testing is truly fascinating. McQuarrie and Cruz are essentially the auteurs of Fallout, bringing their intense passion for filmmaking with incredible technical effort, visible on screen, and uncompromising storytelling that never wastes a moment. This combined creates the most exhilarating and satisfying movie-going experience of 2018. Thanks, Harrison. That's a pretty strong case.
I don't know.
I was pretty impressed.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm allowed to, but no one has told me in a way that I was paying attention that I'm not allowed to. So, let me just say that. So I voted my first awards body this year, the Critics' Choice Awards. And the fun thing about the Critics' Choice Awards is that they have a bunch of like subcategories for genre things. So there's like best sci-fi fantasy, best comedy, best action, blah, blah. And like, I was so excited. There were so many opportunities for me to vote for Mission Impossible. You know, the way that it all broke out. I agree. I love Fallout. Huge fan.
Yeah. Fallout rules.
Yeah.
Fallout is the movie that I kind of wish would come back to theaters. Like, I would go see that in a theater again.
Yeah.
So. There's that. So good job, Harrison. That's our first listener entry. Back to you, Dave.
Ooh. Well, so do I do a listener entry now that we're there? Or do I do my own? I'm going to stick with mine. This might change if you listen to my other podcast, Fighting in the War Room. But today, I feel like my favorite movie of 2018 was Roma. This has a lot to do. This is Alfonso Cuarón's movie that you could watch on Netflix right now, even though that's kind of a crime. The reason I think it worked so well for me, and that I think a lot of people have seen it as kind of distant, or maybe a little boring and draggy, which I can totally see where you're coming from, is I saw it at a film festival that was calibrated to be how it's supposed to be seen. So I saw it at a 4K projection with 7.1 Dolby surround sound in an atmosphere with a whole bunch of people that were very respectful of the film. And the way that this movie is, the way its storytelling works, you slowly settle in to living with this family. The length of the opening first shot and then its eventual reveal of, reflecting plane in the water that's being, used to wash the tile that we've been sitting on is a very interesting sub microcosm of a movie. If you take in the black and white monochrome cinematography of it, and just that's enough of a story in itself as well as, and then the characters come rushing in after you've sort of, has been established in this world. I think it's going to be really hard to properly digest on Netflix. I'm not necessarily looking forward to checking it out again, but I will be watching it again because I think of all of the movies this year, there was a lot that made me, feel or I saw something that I'd never seen before or that had really interesting point of views. Roma is the one movie where I think all those things click together with me, even if the plot isn't like a pot boiler or what have you. I feel like there were moments in cinematography and storytelling and sound and visuals in this movie where I was just amazed at, the process of making a film. So I also think, this was an excellent year for people to look at different types of Mexican people. It's a surprise. They're not all the same type of person. They're different classes and different feelings. The men are all assholes, but that's like across everywhere else. So I would say Roma, at this point, if you haven't seen it in the theater, I don't think you can. So your best Netflix setup for allowing something to suck you in and hold your attention for an extended period of time, that would be how I'd suggest taking in Roma.
If you get like a pair of good Bluetooth headphones and then take an iPad and just hold it close to your face, It's like IMAX.
Yeah. that feels more emotionally right than factually correct.
I think the major thing is not like the size of the screen or the quality of the sound, even though that's obviously very important. It's the distraction watching. Like, that's what I always think of when I think of in theater versus at home. It's like, I was watching Widows as a screener and I was like tweeting something about it. And some asshole, I will say asshole, on Twitter was like, get off your phone and pay attention to the movie. And I was like, you're an asshole, but also you're right. Okay. I put down my phone and stopped tweeting and watched Widows with more focus. But like, if I had been in the theater, since I'm not an asshole who looks at their phone in the theater, it's like, it would have had my full attention. So that's a different, you know, even if it's like, even if you're someone, you know, like us who, are like deeply engaged in film and television. And even if it's like a film as good and as worthy as like Roma or Widows, there's still just always that temptation when you're at home to like be on your phone and looking at the TV at the same time.
There's so many tweets that you have to read.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw in Roma. Awesome. Get it done. I guess this is Joanna's time to do her a listener submission.
Down here, it's my time. All right. So I decided, we had so many great submissions from listeners. It was really, really very, very hard to pick just one for each of us, I think. But I decided to go with someone who like was boosting a film that I feel like, you know, hasn't gotten a lot of boosts and deserves it. So I am going to read Phil's, he is advocating for Minding the Gap. Phil writes, I would like to suggest the documentary Minding the Gap for consideration as the best film of the year. Bing Liu does a masterful job telling the stories of himself and two childhood friends as they grow from teenagers into adults, using some footage from when they were in high school and some footage shot after Bing went to film school. It's really a miracle that this movie exists at all, that Bing got the footage he needed at all the different times that are represented in this documentary in order to bring the narrative together. And not just once, three times, because the true story that Bing is trying to tell about growing up and either breaking cycles of abuse or perpetuating them only comes out when the three stories come together. I like this film the way other people like Boyhood, but I think it's better because there's even more to say about growing up. And I 1000% agree. I always felt like kind of left out in the cold with Boyhood. Like, I just didn't get what other people saw in it. But, you know, Bing Liu does a similar thing, you know, with less intention that Richard Linklater did, is that like he was just taping his friends for years and years and years. And then, you know, you get to adulthood. I mean, they're still very young adults, but, you know, so he's got just footage of them as like kids up through adulthood. You know, documentaries have done this before, obviously, but there's just something like very personal about it. There's like a really show, and there's just beautiful camera work too, because like they're skate kids. So there's like a lot of camera work, like on a skateboard, like being holding the camera while he's skating and stuff like that. And it's just like, it's really amazing. And then there's one like showstopper scene where you sort of like get a behind the scenes, of the documentary itself, which is just really arresting. Anyway, you can watch this right now, right the damn now on Hulu. Minding the Gap. This is a really good year for documentary. I think a lot of people, whether or not they were taking advantage of their movie pass or whatever, wound up going to see like, the RBG documentary or the Mr. Rogers documentary that came out this summer. Free Solo, that's what it's called, right? Also came out this year. That's really good. There's a lot of good stuff.
There's a ton of them.
But Minding the Gap was by far my favorite one. So thank you, Phil, for that submission.
All right. Neil, it's time for the legit Neil pick.
Well, actually, and it's not a big monologue per se. It's just, I've been thinking about it more and more. And here's the terms in which I consider this particular honor of best movie. For me, it's hard to separate best and like most significant or like most valuable. Like, if we had to kill all the movies this year and we could only keep one, which one would you do? Which one would you keep? And I would definitely keep Black Panther because Black Panther rules. But there's something to Black Panther that's more than what you see sort of on the surface of its existence, where it's like on the surface, it's this very cool thing, that Marvel has finally done in putting together a superhero movie at a very large scale with a primarily black cast, which is great. But there's something like on the next level that really fascinates me in that it's a super like brave movie from a storytelling standpoint. They chose Ryan Coogler, who is not just a filmmaker of color. He is someone who has made like very personal stories about identity and culture. And he brought all of that with him to Black Panther, and Marvel let him make it. And I don't say that as like, oh, the big company like lorded over him. I mean, like they gave him the freedom to make a movie that was very, very different from what they had done. And it still strikes me. I watched it a couple weeks back. The way that movie ends with this sort of profound moment between these two men, the hero who's been torn sort of asunder by his family's history and this sort of anti-hero that we really relate to for like so many reasons. We can kind of understand why he's gotten. And for it to end sort of the way that the conversation they have around you know, their ancestors, it's just like, that's a fucking bold move to me. So I will always forever think about Black Panther in those terms, that it's more than just sort of what it represented from a representation standpoint. It's like, there's a lot to this movie that we'll study for years. And I feel like the longer we go, the more significant it will become as a superhero movie. And there will never be, in my mind, a discussion about 2018 film that doesn't somehow include Black Panther. So that's why I chose Black Panther as my
pick. Black Panther.
A friend of mine was over the other night, and she was just like, you know, I keep thinking about Bury Me in the Ocean with my ancestors who jumped from the ships. She was like, I just like that.
That is
just such an incredible line that we
a
all
Disney movie.
Yeah, that we all
ended with that shit.
Disney put that in a movie. That there were producers who looked at it and were like, "Yep." I mean,
yeah,
it's fucking great. I agree.
Yeah. So just crazy. So yeah, Black Panther to me, not only the best, but the most powerful, memorable movie of this particular year. So there you go.
Nice. I'm going to take the final fan pick. I picked a Chestnuts Are Roasting on an Open Iris selection from our Slack. It's short, it's concise, I think it's true. It says, Sorry to Bother You is the 4 best movie. It's great. It's like Terry Gilliam was black and a socialist and made a sci-fi satire about how Amazon is, accurately, evil as fuck.
Yeah, pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Sorry to Bother You, I made the mistake of just spoiling it on another podcast when we were talking about important 2018 movies, but we could just not spoil it and say that the Amazon comparison is super apt. You could watch it streaming right now on Hulu. It is a Boots Riley the Rapper debut film that is about Lakeith Stanfield, who plays a telemarketer who uses his white voice and gains prominence in the company, and about the same time there is a labor dispute.
It is
pick your sides.
What would you call it? It's a satirical meditation on race and capitalism.
Yes, it's has so much on its mind, and then is also smart, funny, and dumb funny at the same time. It's really amazing. And I kind of don't want to spoil the thing for you, but I also, when you get to the thing, you're just like, oh man, the metaphor blows wide open. It's great. Sorry to bother you. It's great.
Tessa Thompson's great in it too.
I was about to say, like, takes place in Oakland, and I just want to say for the record that those sirens you may or may not have just heard were not Oakland sirens for once. But yeah, it's a great Oakland movie. Tessa Thompson is sexier somehow. Steven Yeun is even sexier. And what a great, great movie. Great Army Hammer in the role he was born to play.
That is fair. All right, we're going to take a break, but first let's recap. From our hosts, we have Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Roma, and Black Panther. From our listeners, we have Mission Impossible Fallout, Sorry to Bother You, and Minding the Gap. The category best movie 2018. It's going to be a tough debate in your rooms and your minds. Make sure to vote. We'll be right back with Best TV Show 2018. And it's that time of the year again. Actually, the final time of the year. We're going to read some names of our small council members. We would like to thank, first of all, Mark Jewett. Welcome to the small council. We would also like to thank the following small council members for making the podcast possible. Debbie DeNice, Ruby Durham, Tanya, Andrin Sherm, Dennis Ramirez, Megan Meyer, Randy Webb, Crystal Kirk, Josh Froscheisser, Rebels, Rebels Podcast, Ryan M., Alyssa Scott, Ellen Rabin, Del Nakamura, Corey Hume. I just called you Curry Hume, which is making me hungry. Ryan Allwood, Will Wallace, Huang Yu Lu, Lena Winter, there we go, slowly but surely, Julie C. Bailey, Jewel C. Bailey, and Liz Major.
I want to thank Brian Morosky, Ellen Chen, Randy Blash, Ben O'Gorman, Jessica Lair, Brittany, Sam Cohen, Christina Klein, Sean, Katie Zellner, Kate Whitney, Adrian Martinez, Amber Vickers, Heather Walsh, Shosav O'Dally, Nathan Critchfield.
Oh, damn, I think you nailed it.
Maybe. Patricia Delaney, Dumb Pockets, Derek Doc, Vince Louis, and Rick Russell. Thank you guys so much.
All right, and bringing up the rear with me, I would like to thank Russell Griffin, Philip Durrett, Melanie Unra Rodriguez, Josh Dillard, Sarah Carmichael, Wade McFarland, Kari D. King, Melissa Horsfall, Mariana Cotto, there we go, I think I nailed it, Nate, Sarah Ellis, Robbie Rapace, Jose Cordova, Emily Relf, Amy Gomez, Maggie Craddock, Laurel White, Chris Miracle, Brandy Mondato, Phil, Jackie, and Abby Greiner.
Got some good small counsel.
And that's,
guys, yeah. Thank you,
yeah, thank
for being
you
our
so
Patreons
much,
all year.
That's the last time we're going to do it that way. And we will do it a new way.
Oh, man. I'm so excited.
And we're back to talk about the best TV show of 2018. You know how the format goes. You've just been through like 40 minutes of this. Let's start with Neil. Best TV show 2018.
Okay, so I am actually going to just start with my own this time, not mess everybody up. I would just like to give a shout out to American Vandal. I don't think it's going to win this poll unless everyone goes and watches it right now. Like, if you go and watch American Vandal right now and you watch it all the way through to learning who the turd burglar really is and understanding that you can live a life in which there is a show that you love in which a character is named the turd burglar. If you go do that right now, American Vandal wins because it's great and it's great in the moment. And I think that's the only way it wins. But I has it been canceled yet?
Yep.
Yeah. Probably it'll probably be revived by the time this podcast comes out and then canceled again by the time I'm done talking. So, sad that it's not coming back because I love this show and I love its whole conceit, which is to take the thing that, like, one of the things Netflix did really well in the last couple of years, which is all these like true crime shows, and make fun of it, but also make fun of it in a way that is extremely clever. So if you've got a couple hours to spare before you make your vote, just watch American Vandal and then vote. So that's my choice.
Perfect. I'm going to go next and jump ahead of Joanna here. There's a lot of good TV shows on, and maybe you want something different from a television show. Maybe you want to check in with some people you love. Maybe there's a mystery that you need solved. Maybe there's a ship that you're willing to go down with, no matter what the genre television show is. For me, I like myself some DC's Legends of Tomorrow, and I'm submitting the entire 2018 run, which includes the back half of season 3 and the front half of season 4. Back half of season 3, they're tracking down misfits through time. Sorry, this is the CW show of the superhero team up. I feel like if you've been listening to this podcast, you've heard me talk about this before. But I want to talk about how the end of season 3
boys and embraced- girls. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what you're referencing. Embraces like a ridiculous Silver Age comic book feeling, but then also manages to, through very clever writing, base it out of the emotions of the core group of characters. And it sounds like that would be something that all television shows should do. Lord knows, like, I wish the Netflix, like, comic book series tried to make sure that every episode could stand alone the way DC Legends of Tomorrow does. But it's been really nice to have a superhero show that is not afraid to do an episode where Gorilla Grodd travels back in time and kidnaps college-age Barack Obama, like in this year, 2018. It just is a very interesting, goofy
like
show.
Barry from the movie Barry?
Yes, like that age.
Damn.
But with a telepathic gorilla. It's a ridiculous show, and you could watch all of the third season on Netflix, which if you can't join up and, you know, get in the CW app or buy a season 4 pass to know about the magical season, give the end of season 3 a try. It'll charm you right into watching more DC's Legends of Tomorrow. Much like Neil, I'm not going to win, but I'm going to stand up proudly and die on this hill.
The more I look at this list that's coming up here between Joanna and the listeners, I feel like we brought knives to bazooka fights.
Yeah, but so, essentially.
Cool. We just got to say that we like stuff.
Yeah, we do like stuff. Joanna, let's start the serious candidates with your pick.
But you guys are so self-deprecating. Like, have some faith in your picks. Also, like, bravo to Dave for picking a CW show because, like, actually, we have, like, a fairly nice spread, but still half of the 6 shows we're about to talk about are Netflix, and, like, I'm always resistant to the creeping, like, encroachment of then again, Dave's movie was Netflix. So, anyway,
the Netflixopoly.
Yeah. I always think about something that Kitty Rich brought up, which is that, in David Mitchell's book, Cloud Atlas, all the movies are called Disney's. They're just called Disney's.
Good call. Accurate call.
Yeah. So like as Disney sort of swallows the movie industry and Netflix swallows TV, it just feels like it's going to be two things. Anyway, that's not what we're here for. We're here for something else that's spooky. My pick for the best TV show of 2018 is The Haunting of Hill House, which is a show, like, it's kind of neck and neck with another one that one of our listeners submitted. So, I'm happy to let them advocate for that one. And I will advocate for this one, which is that, this is a show that, sort of very loosely adapted a Shirley Jackson novel, into a, like, genre friendly, long, stretched out, adult family drama, where you get this, you know, you get the story of a family that had, you know, something very traumatic happen to them in their past, and how the group of siblings and the head of the family are dealing with it, in their current adult situations. And how, you know, there's a lot of stories, you know, Dave started the podcast by joking, like, you know, women be traumatized, but like, which is both true. And this idea of like shared and inherited trauma, which Dave has also talked about, like when we talk about stuff like Hereditary and other things, has been such a theme in good art this year. And I think that shared inherited trauma, on display in The Haunting of Hill House, which is just compelling, watchable, frightening, you know, emotional TV for me, and made me go out and watch everything, that it, you know, its showrunner had done. It really got me. And like I finished it and then I kind of started over again, which is something I did with one of our listener submissions too. So that only happened to me twice this year. And in a year where there's so much to watch, that's a really high recommendation. So, Haunting of Hill House, Netflix, my candidate. Mm.
Good nice. Picks. All right, listener pick time. Neil, who are you throwing into the gauntlet?
Well, I was given an opportunity to essentially select two here because this would have been my pick.
Yeah, this is my runner-up, too.
Yeah, so yeah. This is from Bah Humbug Cobra. That's a Christmas one. it is, they say, first, let me start by saying that this show has a scene where Justin Theroux has VR sex with a water goddess and turns Jonah Hill into a hawk and he shouts, Annie, I'm a hawk. Not only that, but this show, it's a show that tackles the topic of mental health and depression in a really insightful way. Add in the incredible world design and beautiful score, which is my most listened to album of the year, according to Spotify.
Wow.
And you have the best show of the year right there. Also, Sonoya Mizuno rules. That last sentence, I cannot endorse enough. She rules. She's the best thing in like three different things this year, or several different things. So, yeah, Maniac on Netflix. Did I say that already? Did I say that it was Maniac on Netflix, or did you figure it out?
I
think I just said it. Yeah. Annie, I'm a hawk.
Yeah.
You get it. We did a whole episode on it. You guys get it. But Maniac, I mean, just everything. It's great.
It's so interesting nice. Because, like, Neil, you and I went to Fantastic Fest, or I don't know if you saw this movie, Fantastic. I saw a truly bad movie by Jonah Hill at Fantastic Fest. And then I saw
I saw the bad one at Fantastic Fest.
Yeah, and then I saw Jonah Hill, like, just be really insufferable around that movie. And it, like, it was not enough to even put a dent in my estimation of Maniac. So that's how strong.
Which is really impressive.
Yeah, because Jonah Hill tried. He really
because
tried.
He did get up there before showing off his movie that shot in 4x3 and saying things like I don't want to have any, you know, tropes from like indie film. And then it's like his movie's in 4x3. It's like, what are you doing, bro?
It was a very bad movie.
Just be a hawk, okay?
Be a hawk. Yeah, be a fucking hawk, dude.
I'm sorry. For my contribution, I picked one from Alice. Listener Alice, who says, my case for Killing Eve as the best TV show of 2018. Killing Eve is like watching a female-led Fincher film and the best cult serial killer anime series ever made, doing an elaborate flirtatious dance of death and destruction around each other, slowly circling, trying to decide if love and obsession are the same thing or merely kissing cousins. Every character comes off as real and charismatic in vastly varying fashions. The show has a dryly arch, empathetically sensual, and violently operatic voice, as if it were conceptualized and shot by Amy Heckerling, but storyboarded by Brian De Palma. Every note sings the song of itself, and its meditations and note changes are hypnotic. Weller Bridge infuses the story's structure and arcs with tinges of two poles' auras, the assassin and the agent who play across the board, more like lovers in a game than opponents in a deadly match of wits. The alchemy made between them is what gives this series its weight and depth of greatness. I don't watch Killing Eve, but I love the way that was written.
God, yeah.
Killing Eve.
Yeah, I mean, if that doesn't make you want to watch Killing Eve, I'm not sure.
It does. It does. Dude, it reminded me Killing Eve of something I missed.
It's a great show. I've just never been able to articulate how great it is. All right, and then we're going to wrap up with mine, which is actually another Ira pick. I don't think we meant to pick two from the same person, but Dave picked one and I picked one. Ira wrote... Sharp Objects deserves to win Best Show of 2018. Maybe I'm biased because I love doing the book club with fellow Slack bays, but it was truly an incredible show. It's about mental health, dysfunctional family systems, and complex women. It's about trauma under patriarchy, told through a noir detective story. Also, it's Jean-Marc Vallée going hard with his thing, providing intense subjective insights into the protagonist without a word of narration. The way he captures triggers just gives me chills. Super well done. And I just want to echo that. This was, you know, Our Patreon subscribers, our listeners who are in our Slack, I would say that there's like two shows we watched like together this year. And it was Westworld season 2, which was very hit and miss. And it was Sharp Objects. And like the experience of like reading the book and then like every Sunday night, the listeners like gathering to watch Sharp Objects in our Slack really, really did enhance that for me. The fact that I did a podcast on it, still watching with Richard Lawson, really enhanced it for me. But independent of all that, it is a tremendously good piece of television. Especially just like the very distinct style that Jean-Marc Vallée has, you know, which you saw a bit in Big Little Lies and you've definitely seen in his films, but it's just like, I felt like this is the best example of what he can do with a visual medium. So, and an amazing performance from Amy Adams and Patricia Clarkson and, you know, Chris Messina and everyone else involved. So, sharp objects. Women be traumatized.
Women be traumatized.
I mean, I feel like that's the flagship show. The traumatization.
It is definitely a flagship show of Women Be Traumatized. All right, so we have Best TV Show of 2018 host picks, Haunting of Hill House, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, and American Vandal. Listener picks, Maniac, Sharp Objects, Killing Eve, They're all going to go in the voting gauntlet. You can go right now to twitter.com/stormspoilers. I'm guessing right now. A lot of you are like super prompt, so, you know, maybe chill, have a sandwich. But at some point when this episode is up, there are going to be polls up there that you can go vote for, and we will decide by the time 2019 rolls around what the best of 2018 was.
And then Neil, no one can question it. That's
exactly.
It.
Neil, are we doing anything next week?
Guys, I have an exciting announcement. This is the last episode of 2018.
Woo!
So we'll be back in 2019. We have all kinds of good stuff, to tell you about 2019. We have all kinds of fun stuff that we're planning for January, but we are going to take next week off and enjoy, I believe, a holiday. There's a holiday coming up.
Yeah, we're just watching The Expanse, Neil. I don't know what, yeah, I don't know what you're doing.
What's the holidays in The Expanse? We'll find out. So all we really can say to you is we should give you some advice, but I feel like I should let Dave give you the advice because he has carried this torch the whole year, and assuming nothing has changed, he continues to carry it to this moment.
Mm-hmm. And it's important that you feel, listener, that I feel successful because you could feed off of it. Here we go. You are mere days away from making it an entire year without falling down. So don't fall down now. We're going to be gone for a couple of weeks, but you need to stay upright, not falling. We'll be back next year talking to you about probably not falling down for another year or other things. Until then, where can people find your work? On the internet, Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Neil Miller.
You get me on the filmschoolrejects.com website. You can get me on the Twitter at Rejects. And don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers, where we'll do the polls. And if you have anything to tell us about falling down, do stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. You could find my other podcast, Fighting in the War Room, at fightinginthewarroom.com, where we will do top tens for your movies, in case you don't have enough podcasts to last you the rest of the year. It has been a fantastic privilege to spend 2018 with you all in crazy pop culture worlds. Yeah, stay upright. Don't fall down.
Less. Calling it quits now, baby, I'm already